This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's up, Richmond? Wednesday morning, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM, always worldwide. On the free Odyssey app, it's a good thing we're worldwide, because we are in Minnesota this morning, Minneapolis to be exact. Roadshow this week's got nothing to do with this show. I'm just in Minneapolis this week, so you're getting a show from Minneapolis. Very cool, though. I'm in the Hyatt Place here in Minneapolis, because that's how I roll, very fancy like that. My room here, as I do the show this morning, as we get rolling. One, there's a lot of smoke in the air, a lot of haze in the air. Nobody wants to go outside, so that is a bummer. I'm at the Institute for Nonprofit News annual convention, so it's a gathering of people who do news. Of course, I got another job. It's over at the Richmonder, richmonder.org. I'll give a brief plug for that. Go sign up right now, please, to get our emails. So we gather every year to talk about the news industry, and what we're going to do. Now, this is my first one. The Richmonder is 9 months old. So this is my first nonprofit news convention. Last year, and it's in the past. We can't control the past. Last year, it was in San Diego. So I'm just saying, my timing was not phenomenal. This year, Minneapolis. And I actually love Minneapolis. Great city, great downtown. Right now, though, nobody wants to be outside because we got wildfire smoke all over the place. So that's not great. So I look out my window. I see wildfire smoke. I guess that would be number one. Number two, I got a view of U.S. Bank Stadium, which is, of course, where the Minnesota Vikings play. And I have been there for Vikings Commanders games. Not the first memory that comes to mind, though, when I look at that building, because I look at that building and I remember Tony Bennett cutting down the nets with UVA basketball, which was there, which was, I mean, here's my take on that UVA basketball year, and I'm not going to back down from this. You're welcome to argue with me, but I'm not going to back down from this. The game against Purdue, the Elite Eight game? Yeah, the Elite Eight game that they won to go to the Final Four. If the team that had won that game was named Duke or Kentucky, we would consider that the greatest game in college basketball history. Full stop, no debate. We would, right? You got, obviously, Magic Bird on that list. You've got the Christian Laettner moment on that list, which was a good game. The whole thing's a good game. Duke Butler is certainly on that list, right? So all the games we talk about have that, the star power or involve Duke or Kentucky. Double overtime title game involving Kansas, North Carolina, Michael Jordan shot, right? All the moments you think about in college basketball are famous team, kind of plus famous player usually equals famous moment in college basketball. And I don't want to take away any of those. They've been playing the sport a long time. There's some great moments. That was the greatest game in college basketball history, full stop. The reason it doesn't get its due is because of the baked-in bias against Virginia. And you throw in Purdue was on the ascent at the time, a Big Ten team. They had not established themselves yet. I think now you say Purdue, people say, okay, that's a good team every year, right? A young one seed that lost after UVA lost as a one seed, of course. They're the two that have done it. They don't get their due. UVA doesn't get its due. So I think when you say that game, people are like, I remember that game, you know, the tip, the pass, Carson Edwards for Purdue going nuts. Great basketball game. But people don't like, that's the greatest basketball game of all time. You don't hear anybody say that, but they should, because that was the greatest college basketball game of all time. I believe that. The stakes. And if you're a college basketball coach, there's nothing bigger than getting to the Final Four. And I know that sounds crazy. You said, well, the biggest thing is to win a title. Winning a title is great. Truly, the biggest thing for a college basketball coach is getting to the Final Four. The game they feel the most pressure in is that Elite Eight game, because if you win that game, you stay relevant to the end of the season. You get that week after the Elite Eight game. You get that week. You go back to campus. You're riding high. Everybody loves you. There's parades. There's practices. You're going to the Final Four. You're getting the experience. Very similar to in college baseball, the importance of making it to Omaha, right? What did people say at the start of the year? Not, we're going to win the Natty. We're going to make it to Omaha. And everybody understands, too, at the Final Four, at the College World Series, there's an element of randomness to everything that happens where you can have a phenomenal team, right? You can have an undefeated team, as we learned a few years ago, more than a few years ago now, but you don't win the title because there's four really good basketball teams there. And things happen when in a basketball game. Things definitely happen in a baseball game, in an environment where you have eight really good baseball teams in one place. You would never pretend that that event sorts out the best college baseball team in America. It crowns a national champion, but all of those teams are worthy because they've run the gauntlet to get there. And so that Elite Eight game, a pressure-packed, pressure cooker of a game, Carson Edwards for Purdue goes nuts, goes for 40, and doesn't win because of an incredible play that we talk about plays we can watch and rewatch. That's actually a great summer topic. Let's rack that for bit season at some point here. Just plays you could watch over and over again. Obviously, y'all know the Jane Daniels throw to Terry McLaurin was my favorite moment of the last season, even more so than the Hail Mary, which is also a play I could watch over and over again. But it's absolutely the Cincy game. Jane to Terry, the announcement on national TV against Joe Burrow on Monday Night Football. We're here. I'm here. I'm not scared of this guy. I know this guy's good, and I know I have to score every time I touch the ball. I'm just going to do it, and I'm going to make this throw against a zero blitz, not looking, knowing where my guy is, and put it right where it needs to be. That's a throw I could watch an infinite number of times. The magical Mama Day tip play, does it have a name? It's probably got a name at this point. I would think that, I'll look that up. The Virginia Purdue Sweet 16 game. Elite Eight game. I keep getting confused here. Doing my on-air research here. There's no, it's 10 for 17. Carson Edwards from three is incredible. 80-75 in overtime. Ty Jerome hit the shot. Kihei Mamadi. That's the one. That's the best college basketball game of all time. I believe that. And I think if Duke or Kentucky had been involved with it, I think everybody else would believe that too. The Wikipedia entry just refers to it as a, quote, instant classic. I've seen Mamadi's Miracle. Like, I don't think that's the accepted name of the play. Did it get a name? Maybe it never got a name. I don't think the Jane Daniels Hail Mary ever got a name. Miracle in Landover a couple times. Sometimes great plays don't get names. There's your takeaway from this morning. Two great plays, so both don't have names. But that individual play, when the odds were stacked against them, and what we didn't know at the time was that they were going to pull the rabbit out of the hat two more times here in Minnesota, here at the Final Four. They overcame the odds three separate times. By the way, so if you lose at the Final Four, there's a rush for everybody to get out of town, because we've been, as sports writers, as people traveling, as fans, you've probably been to three cities in 3 weeks. If we went to the ACC tournament too, now you're in four locations in 4 weekends. And so the first time I covered the Final Four was with VCU in 2011. They lost, and everybody who was with me, Tim Perrell, Paul Woody, Dean Hoffmeyer, that whole crew, immediately, like, before they wrote a story, before they did anything, before we went to the locker room, bought a plane ticket to get home, and just locked that in right away. So I learned that, and I actually did that in Denver this year. I got out of Denver as soon as VCU lost. But I was young, and I didn't have anything to, do. So I stayed for the title game. I won the Natty. Like, that'd be fun to watch that. I've come to realize over the years, like, the grind they were on, I just floated in for the Final Four. The grind they were on, that's why they left. And I did that this year in Denver after, you have the long season, the long buildup, and you lose, and it's a bummer when you lose. You're just ready to get out of there. When Kyle Guy missed his free or got fouled, missed the three, got fouled in that game against Auburn. From my view, I couldn't see the foul called, and I actually was pulling up the website to buy a plane ticket home. And then you hear the yelling, and then you hear the Auburn fans getting very mad, and you realize, we're still playing. This thing's still happening. Then overtime, Texas Tech, great memory, great night. Tony Bennett, well-deserved, cutting down the nets. I remember Patrick Mahomes was like five rows behind me at the time. This was before he was full-on Patrick Mahomes. He was just regular Patrick Mahomes, but he was still highly thought of, I believe, as an NFL quarterback. Yeah, it was fun. It was so satisfying, right? All that storyline arc, which contributes, too, to that Elite Eight game being the greatest college basketball game of all time. This was a team that had lost as the one seed the year before, a thing that had never happened. And then here they are getting the redemption in the most ridiculous way possible. That happened here in Minneapolis. Staring at the stadium right now, which is a top five stadium. Maybe we'll rack that in a minute. You know, I've done that as a bit season topic before, best NFL stadiums. Maybe we'll get to that before the show's over. I want to do a little Hokie football. Of course, Commanders on the field today for OTAs, so we will get to all that. Should be a fun radio program for you this morning from Minneapolis. Looking forward to it. Thank you for joining us. MP on the mic, 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM. We're off and rolling. Back after this with a little Hokie football talk on your Wednesday morning. We'll get to the Commanders, too, on your home for both teams and the Flying Squirrels. They lost again yesterday because that's what they do. They lose baseball games. 2 weeks away. Three weeks away from a season reset. We'll reset everybody back to zero, and we'll win the second half title in Richmond. 1 week away from Odyssey night at the Diamond. Flying Squirrels baseball tonight, of course, with Trey and Blaine. Take a break. We'll be back after this. You're listening to 910 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
105.1 FM rolling along. Summertime, counting down to football. Be your home for the Commanders this year. Looking forward to that. We'll, of course, talk plenty of Commanders as the summer rolls on, but we are not about to forget the Virginia Tech Hokies, your home for Hokie football as well. And we're wrapping up the summer sports season in Virginia with the academic sports season in Virginia with Brian O'Connor leaving as one final kick in the pants on a largely forgettable year around here. We move on. VCU won the A-10. We'll do that. UR, first lacrosse victory, NCAA tournament victory in school history. So we were not without moments, but we were certainly lacking in great moments. And a lot of that was just the full-on sad trombone of a start with Virginia Tech losing to Vanderbilt in overtime in that opener in Nashville. And now this opener won't be the same for the Hokies because you've got, you know, Virginia Tech, South Carolina, right? South Carolina is going to be the heavy favorite to win that game. That's not going to take the air out of anybody's balloon, whatever happens down there in Atlanta. But then you've got Vandy at home the next week. That's a big early game on a season that will be a referendum for Brent Pry, will be a referendum for whether he should continue as the Hokies coach, but also who the Hokies are and who they can be over the next decade. I don't think I'm being overly dramatic in that. Especially, I mentioned Brian O'Connor, right? You look at Tony Bennett leaving, Mike Young, who I think does a great job with an under-resourced team, and you just see that team really had no chance at making the NCAA tournament at any point during the year, and it wasn't because of Mike Young, and it wasn't Mike Young's fault, but that's the world we live in. It's really hard for Virginia Tech, with their limited resources, to be good across the board. And so there's extra importance on that football team. And every year puts us further and further from the golden days. Every year puts us further and further. 25 years now since Michael Vick. 25 years since that magic. And there have been great athletes come through the program between then. But you'd argue that really that was kind of the peak of the Hokies' national relevance. They traded off of that for a while, had the run of Orange Bowls, had some great teams. Now they're fighting and clawing to get back to that baseline respectability level. And I've said that before as we've broken down the Hokies' season, which is they need to establish, not that they're an ACC title contender, but they need to establish that they're not in the pack. And to me, it's that middle four games this year of the schedule when they play NC State, Wake Forest, Georgia Tech, and Cal. Those are four teams that, you know, like it or not, the Hokies, if they're going to be who they say they are, need to win those football games. The Hokies from back in the day took care of business when it was time to take care of business. If you split those, if you go 2-2 in those, you're in the middle. You're in the pack. And you're not distinguished in any way, right? You're not the program you think you are. You're not the drawing power you think you are. And if it's not Brent Pry going forward, if there's a change, I think there's a big question of how attractive that job is. It's an ACC job. It's indisputably a very good job in the sense that you're in a power conference, but it's not an SEC job. It's not a big time sure thing job. It's not a heavily resourced job. You're going to have the opportunity to be successful, but it's that you don't have, what was it, Calipari left for the Tyson chicken money? You don't have the Tyson chicken money to throw around. You just got regular money. And Virginia Tech's, you know, Whit Babcock is doing everything he can do to make sure the money faucet stays on. But I wonder what kind of drawing power they could get, what the expectations will be for a new coach. Because that's a program that we want to be great. We want to see the Hokies be great. And right now, they're in the middle of the pack. And they've been in the middle of the pack for a while. And when you've seen the top, it's tough to go back. When you've sat in first class, it's hard to go back to coach. It's hard to make that jump back after you've had the success they've had and you've seen what it's like to play in big name bowl games and you've seen the caliber of bowl they're invited to steadily decline over the years. And you wake up one day and you're playing Rutgers and it's 6-3, and you wake up one day and you're at the Pinstripe Bowl and it's freezing outside and you hang on, we're not in South Beach anymore. Hang on, we're not, this program is not where we thought it was anymore. And that's where Virginia Tech football is right now. And that's a big issue they've got to take on and they've got to figure out here in the coming days and weeks and months leading into what is an incredibly important season. Now, I mentioned the middle four games this season, but their home stretch is against the big boys. They got Louisville, Florida State, and Miami, their three of their final four before they go beat UVA. That is, you know, that's a test yourself stretch, right? If you handle your business in the middle of the pack, that's one where you can make some noise, get some big wins. Last year, almost had a monster win at Miami, which will stand as a program what if. That'll be a big what if for that program is what if they had won that game? Would the momentum have carried them to more things? College football is a small sample size sport. Always has been, always will be. So Hokie football, all season long on the Fan. Looking forward to that. I don't know. Vandy at home. Diego Pavia in his 17 millionth year as a college athlete. All numbers approximate. It's a scary early test for a team that we'll see if they make any superstars. If they can find a way to make a name for themselves and you know, get not in that Michael Vick club, but in the Logan Thomas club, let's call it. Let's we'll do that in the Cam Chancellor club, right? And in that group of guys, these are guys who have been around long enough and with a good season can get there. We'll do that in the next segment. Let's do that in the next segment. Best Hokie players post Michael Vick. I think that would be that'd be a fun one for our bit season. We'll do a list. We haven't done a list in like 12 minutes. So happy bit season to y'all. But right now, we're in Minneapolis doing the show remotely here. I'm staring at U.S. Bank Stadium as we do the show, one of the great stadiums in football, and of course the site of UVA winning the Natty back when UVA had coaches you had heard of and won things as well. Squirrels news to pass along. Nah, they didn't win. It's not squirrels news like that. Come on now, be realistic. Squirrels news, Bryce Eldridge is out of here. He was... You know, one of the top prospects in Major League Baseball. It was fun while it lasted. He has been assigned to AAA Sacramento. Joining him is Trent Harris, pitcher, has been promoted from Richmond to Sacramento as well. There's very few times where you go out to the ballpark, see a minor league game, and you can say, that guy's going to be a star. Bryce Eldridge is going to be a star. And we got to see him in Richmond for a minute, which was super exciting. And, you know, this is where we talked about this yesterday with the Nats affiliation, with the way, you know, the team affiliates right now with the San Francisco Giants. I'm not going to see a ton of Bryce Eldridge when he makes the show, because I'm not going to watch a ton of San Francisco Giants games. I don't have the satellite package. I don't want to stay up until 10 p.m. to watch San Francisco Giants baseball. That's the disconnect here. You back in the Braves days, we would have seen Bryce Eldridge, and then we'd be like, it's going to be so fun to watch him for the Braves on TBS for the next 10 to 15 years. That's why I would love to see the affiliation moved to the Nats. If James Wood had come through here, I think we'd be talking a lot more often about how he's doing in the major league. Because every time you say, hey, there's James Wood. Remember that time we saw him? Remember that time he was crushing homers out of CarMax Park? And it gives you that little extra connection, that little extra nudge, that little extra reason to watch, right? Which is, as sports fans, what you need. Formula One ratings are way up, right? Why are they way up? Because people watch the Netflix show. They connect with the drivers. That's why the NFL fights to preserve Hard Knocks, even though no team wants to be on it, because they know we watch Hard Knocks during training camp, and it gives us the ties, right? When it was the Lions, before they were the Lions, we watched, we loved Dan Campbell, and then Lions are on TV, and it's not, you know, Lions are on TV, I guess I'll do some laundry. Dan Campbell, I know him, I like him, I'm invested in his story, and I want to watch him play sports today, and That's the hook that the squirrels are missing, because we don't see those guys at the next level. And I think they would really benefit from having that hook with the Nationals. MP on the mic is the show. You're listening to 910 The Fan. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM. We are always worldwide on the free Odyssey app, your home of the Hokies. We're setting up the season in the last segment. I decided we're going to do a list. All right, I cannot be held responsible for the quality of this list. Check in with me. Michael P. and RVA on the social media. Of course, we're always... if you use the Odyssey app, you can do a thing where you send us a voice memo and we can play it on the air. So it's like being a caller, but it's not being a caller because it's a voice memo because we're cool and that's the future and that's what people do now. So if you use the Odyssey app and you want to respond, you can send us a voice memo. And I can't promise we'll play it like it doesn't show up immediately like a call, but we will play it. We will address your feedback, your thoughts. That's the voice memo. It's in the Odyssey app. You thought we would stop at the rewind button, but no. The Odyssey app people, they just keep innovating over the summer, too. We love it. So send us a voice memo on the Odyssey app today. Okay, so Michael Vick leaves. And then since then, and that's basically, you've got a clean geographic split here. That's basically the 2000s. So we're now at 25 years of college football in the 2000s. We've got 2.5 decades to choose from post Michael Vick. And the UVA fans clowned on Tech for building the empty trophy case after. It was a reasonable thing to do in the moment. When things are good, you think things will always be good. And you just, in football particularly, it's so, so hard to stay at the top. And they had moments and they had opportunities. And my forever what if is, what if they don't lose to Boise State at that Monday night game, ESPN kickoff game at FedEx Field? because I think if they win that, they dig deep and they get JMU. And then they ran the table after that, of course, which, you know, that was a good team. If they had beaten Boise, which they could have, it was a very close game. It was a very exciting game. Even if they lose to JMU, honestly, you write it off as like, like 3 days later. And they've got the resume. I think they're probably playing for another national title if they beat Boise State in that game. That's how thin the margins are. That's how close it is. But players who have been great Hokies since then, and that's because, you know, who's it going to be this year? Kyren Drones, how are we going to think of him when he leaves, right? Bashil Tootin, how do we think of him and his contributions? I love Bashil Tootin. I love watching him run, but I have very few great memories, great like moments to hang on to there. Sometimes you have players who are like, okay, they were bit players in the big scheme of the team, but they gave you Joe Harris at UVA basketball, for example, right? Like, you can tell the story of UVA basketball without Joe Harris in the sense that he never was on the court for a wildly meaningful UVA, you know, big tournament win. But also, when you say Joe Harris, I got a lot of memories in the memory bank of big plays and shooting threes and those things. That's Bashil Tootin, where I got memories of some great runs, but he's not coming up to the top of the file for sure. All right, so best Hokies since Michael Vick, and that's, and we're not doing these in order because I've written them down on a piece of paper. So one, I will forget somebody. And I was trying to get locals too. Greg Stroman, not an all-time Hokie great, but we give extra points, right? He's got the ties and he plays for the Commanders. So we kept hearing from him. Macho Harris, of course, part of that great Highland Springs dynasty. So we're not, you know, and he's on my list, by the way. Macho Harris. Here's my list. Great Hokie since Michael Vick. I think you probably have to start with D'Angelo Hall. If we're doing actual rankings, and you got two options here in the secondary, and they're both really good. D'Angelo Hall made a name for himself. Like, D'Angelo Hall was front and center seeking attention, four interceptions in an NFL game, a lot of swagger, obviously played for the Redskins for a while, so we saw him locally as well. But I think is well known, he was on NFL Network for a little while after he left football, which to me is a gauge of not just how good you were, you have to be very good to be on NFL Network, but also how popular you were, how much name recognition you have. He had the name recognition. He got that spot, right? You see, guy, you know, Greg Olsen on TV. Greg Olsen was never like a superstar, but when they put Greg Olsen in the booth, nobody's like, who's Greg Olsen? We knew who Greg Olsen was. He's a guy, you know, he's a tight end. He's a guy Cam Newton threw the passes to. That D Hall had that level of name recognition. But if we're in the secondary, we are also talking Cam Chancellor, obviously. Cam Chancellor, who to me, single-handedly won a Super Bowl for the Seattle Seahawks. Of course, the Russell Wilson Super Bowl, where they beat Peyton Manning and the Broncos, throttled them in the Super Bowl. The Broncos that season made their money on Wes Welker over the middle for 5 yards. And second play of the game-ish, Peyton Manning throws it over the middle to Wes Welker, and Cam Chancellor hits him. In a way, football is violent, and even on TV, you don't catch how violent football is, how fast it is, how intense football is, in a way that you do when you see it in person. It was the most violent hit I've ever seen legally made on a football field. It was a full on, like, I've noticed that you like to do this. You're welcome to do this. You gained your 5 yards, but just know every time you gain your 5 yards, you are going to feel it in a way you've never felt it before. So decide. You can make the call if that's a thing you're interested in doing tonight or not, because I am prepared to uncork on you 50 more times if that is what it takes. And he was not himself the rest of the night. And right, it was at the beginning of the concussion era. So obviously now you say, like, did he get a concussion? And we know Wes Welker had a ton of concussions in his career. But it was a legal hit. It's a violent game. And he thought differently about it the rest of the night. And that play was not available to Peyton Manning, which was one of their signature plays of the year. Of course, great performance by the defense. Of course, Russell Wilson showed up in a big-time way that day as well. That felt like the start of a dynasty. It came unraveled when they threw the interception on the goal line a year later. That's well-documented as well. But in that moment, I thought Cam Chancellor should have been the MVP of the Super Bowl because I thought he won that Super Bowl in a very tangible way for the Seattle Seahawks. So Cam Chancellor's on my list of best Hokies since Michael Vick as well. Quarterbacks, you're going Tyrod Taylor, of course, who remains to be like, he did it, Mikey, Tyrod did it. You got great moments over the course of the career. You've got a great dude who was loved and still loved in some NFL time, Logan Thomas, who had the misfortune of coming right after Tyrod Taylor. And that's, I think Logan Thomas was a great player too, reinvented himself as an NFL tight end. Very good dude. Love Logan Thomas. Loved interacting with him when he was in DC. He's an all timer. His wife is starting a wedding venue in Lynchburg, as their like post-retirement project. So there you go. Fun Logan Thomas trivia on the side as well. If they go in opposite order, where Logan Thomas is first and then Tyrod Taylor second, I think Logan gets more love because it was always what he wasn't. It wasn't quite Tyrod. And the team wasn't quite Tyrod's team either. And you were starting to see the beginning of what I'd call kind of the descent a little bit. Not that they weren't very good. They were very good. But in those years, you were starting to feel like, okay, are we going to compete for natties again? Is it going to happen? That Boise year, the last gasp team for sure. And then after that, it was, okay, they're good. Are they good like that? I don't know. I don't know if they're good like that. I think they're just regular good. And now they're a notch down from that. Now they're in the middle. Now they're mediocre. Now they're fighting and clawing to get back to really good, which is tough. David Wilson, running back, of course. That's an easy one. David Wilson's on the list of best Hokies since Michael Vick. We'll rank them at some point, not today. Would need to dive into that more. Brandon Flowers, I left off at cornerback, of course. Brandon Flowers. So you got three corners. That's pretty good. And Kyle Fuller as well. I want to throw him in that mix as well. Not quite at the defensive back high end level, but very, very good. So yeah, you got a lot of guys there. David Wilson, Ryan Williams, who is a what if, what could have been, had he not been injured. I think he would have been much, much higher on the list for sure. Recent draft pick in Edmonds, Tremaine Edmonds, and the Edmondses, the Edmonds Eye. Of course, the Fullers, the Edmondses, some great sibling traditions with the Hokies as well, which is awesome. Xavier Adibi at linebacker, so we'll need one of those. I mentioned our local guys, Macho Harris. Daryl Tapp, who I don't even associate anymore because I think of him so much as the Commanders' defensive coach, which he's very, very good at. He was a fun dude as well. They had some great guys. I think, you know, if I miss anything about the Hokie dynasties, Beamer was a good dude. And the players were good dudes, and maybe it was because they were so isolated in Blacksburg, but it felt like they never had that air of diva-ness that does seem to accompany great athletes and great programs these days. They never had that air of like untouchability, invincibility, whatever that is. That's one of my favorite statues, like in all of sports statue recognitions, is the Beamer one, because it's just him sitting there, and that's who he was. He was accessible. He was a dude. It was a great era for Virginia Tech football, because you could be, you know, you felt like you could go to practice, you could watch and engage with the team, and they showed you that love back. I haven't mentioned Dwayne Brown, of course, who had a very productive NFL career as well at left tackle, which is a primo position. He made himself a lot of money in the NFL. Will we talk about Kyren Drones that way? Are there guys who talk about that way? I don't know. That's what we'll find out. And that's part of the fun. That's what we do here when we air the games, when we air the talk, when we air Tech Talk Live, which should come back on Thursdays in season. Referendum season for Brent Pry, I think, is bigger than that. I think it's a referendum season for what the Hokies can be going forward. And there's a lot of those discussions. You don't have to like where college sports is at, but you sure have to acknowledge where college sports is at. We'll take a break. We'll be back more after this. You're listening to 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM. Countdown to Washington Commanders football, which we love and have right here on 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM, all season long, which we're very excited about. Next week is minicamp. Today is OTAs, so you'll hear a lot of Commanders content coming out this afternoon. Our guy AWOD will be on top of that. AWOD is noon to 3 each day here. Grant and Danny drive you home from 3 to 6. They will, of course, have plenty to say about the burgundy and gold as well. So there's excitement in the air. It's OTAs, and it feels like traditionally at OTAs at minicamp, it's a lot about the new players, the new faces. There aren't a ton of those, as happens when you have a successful team. I'm excited to see some of these new guys. I was certainly excited to see Jalen Lane and see his role and see how he can break in. I think that wide receiver room is a ton of fun as well to speculate on how that's going to shake out. Because, and I'm working under the assumption that Terry McLaurin will sign a long-term contract. I've said before, zero panic there, zero worries there. It's not the time of year to be panicking about guys like that. Terry, by the way, is a savvy veteran. Terry knows that if you don't sign your contract until after optional practices, you don't have to participate in optional practices, which is not a knock on his work ethic at all, by the way, because the dude works out like a maniac. But you have your creature comforts. You have your off-season routine. You have your house. You have your gym. You have your trainer. And you disrupt that to go train with the team for the week. And it's sometimes just easier to say, I'm with my fam. I'm with my guy. I'm going to keep doing the thing I do, and I'll show up ready to go next week when it's minicamp time, or this season when it's training camp time and it's time to go. So zero concerns on Terry McLaurin there at all. He's in. He's in the starting lineup. Debo Samuel's in the starting lineup. But anytime we have the wide receiver discussion, I give the caveat, and this is what I believe, because I don't think we'll know what this offense is truly going to look like even week one, week two, week three. I think Cliff Kingsbury knows slash had reinforced to him last year the importance of weekly innovation in the NFL. And I think he's probably been working on a lot of stuff this summer that he is going to slow roll out over the course of the season. And when you have a weapon like Debo Samuel, you have a lot of ways you can use him. And so I don't know that we'll truly get a sense of what Debo's role is going to be even in week one, even in week two, even after those first couple of games. We'll leave Lambeau Field and we'll know record-wise where the team's at, but I don't think we'll know exactly how they're going to use Debo Samuel, because there's so many different ways you can do it. So when we have this wide receiver discussion, you also got to keep in mind that Debo is like 25% running back as well, and maybe more, maybe 30 or 35%, depending on the week, depending on the need. That's his role. That's what he's contributing. He's not strictly going to line up in that wide receiver spot every time. We're going to see him move around, which creates more opportunities for wide receivers. Now, I also think if we're going way downstream here, as we talk about the wide receivers, which I think is a fascinating position, as we go way downstream, last year they ran a ton of two tight end. And it's not that they did that because Cliff Kingsbury loves that, although he does love that. They also, with Brandon Coleman as your left tackle, there were questions about how well he would block. There were questions about how good of a blocker he would be. And you needed that extra oomph. That's why they paid John Bates. When you need the extra blocking, when you need the extra oomph, John Bates is going to be there for you. John Bates is going to give you the blocking. He's going to give you the ability to, you know, block and provide that extra protection for Jaden Daniels. If things go well this year, I think things went really well this offseason. If things go right this year, you have really good options. Laremy Tunsil and Josh Connerly on the edges. And maybe you say, okay, these guys don't need as much help. We're going to run more one tight end, get more receivers on, get more options and opportunities for Jaden Daniels to throw the ball. That feels very possible as well. So that opens up more wide receiver spots as well in that room. So Terry's in, Debo's in. But this isn't a straight, you only need two wide receivers and you're done kind of situation. I think there will be a lot of three and we'll see some four wide receiver sets as the season goes on. And you've got a ton of guys in that mix. I think there's four guys very legitimately in that mix. In Noah Brown, obviously. Love what Noah Brown brought to the table last year. He was a great training camp pickup for these guys. Luke McCaffrey. Luke McCaffrey's under a little bit of pressure. It's year two in the NFL, and it is not a patient league. Luke McCaffrey was not good enough last year to have a guaranteed roster spot coming in this time around. I think he'll be on the team. I think he'll make the roster. They like him. They like his work ethic. The production, though, was not where it needed to be last year. Year two leap, we've seen a lot of guys make him. Very possible for him to do a lot better in year two to move that forward. I think that's a very reasonable thing to expect, that there could be a year two step forward for Luke McCaffrey. I also think if he shows up at training camp and he's not what they want him to be, he's not at the spot where you say, well, we'll put up with it. You know, he could be a practice squad candidate. And by the way, if they send him to the practice squad, I don't think he's going to get poached at that point, because I don't think anybody's taken a wide receiver who they don't feel they can plug in right away onto their 53 at that juncture of the season when everybody's fallen in love with their 53. KJ Osborne came over from New England, and Jalen Lane from the Hokies. Now, Jalen Lane's interesting because we talk about earning roster spots. It's tricky. Some teams carry six wide receivers on game day. Some teams carry five. This team, I think, will carry six, but Jalen Lane will not earn his spot as a wide receiver. I think he will be the returner on special teams, because I think that's more important than it's ever been in the NFL, is the opportunity to return a kick, which used to be became a rare thing towards the end of the traditional kickoff rules, is now going to happen a lot more often. Now the touchbacks go to the 35. You're going to have a lot more kickers putting the ball between the 10 and the goal line on the kickoff, and you're going to have to run it back. It's not an opportunity. It's an obligation. You're going to have to run the kickoffs back. I think Jalen Lane will be the designated returner. I think he's electric in that. But if you're on the field in that role, you can be on the field in any role you want, right? If you're on the game day roster, if you're on the 47 who suit up on game day, then you've got the opportunity to be used in other places. And I think that's Jalen Lane's opportunity, both right now with Terry McLaurin gone and the opportunity for extra reps with Jaden into training camp. And he'll be in those wide receiver drills. He'll be in that room. He'll be learning those plays. And if he can absorb it quickly, and if he can learn quickly and grow quickly, I think Jalen Lane can be a part of the passing game, and maybe even quickly, because it's not a roster spot debate and it's not an inactives debate. He will be suited up because he's going to be returning the kicks, which is important enough to put a dedicated person on. But hey, while you're here, if you don't mind getting that done as well, that'd be fantastic. Jalen Lane, if you return the kicks, you return the punts, if you could get in there, run some go routes, run some crossing routes as well, well, that's a freebie. We don't have to use a roster spot on that. So I think he can apply pressure from the other side on playing time towards McCaffrey and towards Noah Brown as the season goes on. And then, of course, you're also competing for catches with Zach Ertz, with Ben Sinnott, who you need to figure out what Ben Sinnott's got this year as well. You would say he's probably the most, he was the most disappointing draft pick in year one. But I always tell the story, Morgan Moses was labeled a bust at the end of year one. Then year two, turn the corner, NFL starter for a very long time and still out there mauling dudes, still the pride of Chesterfield County, still one of the most reliable tackles in NFL history, which is not nothing. And I think he deserves a lot more credit for playing through a lot of things each week. He had a very intense training regimen that allowed him to do that. Ben Sinnott, it's time for him to take that step up. It's time for him to do it, and he can, because year two, you can see guys, you can see the light bulb go off. You can see guys start to make it. It starts to click. They figure it out. Okay, I know what I'm doing now. I know what I'm looking for. I know what I'm reading. I feel more comfortable in this room. I think Ben Sinnott's got the possibility to do that, but it's going to be tough. As I mentioned, I think there will be fewer tight ends overall. There are going to be situations where John Bates needs to be in there mauling a dude, because you're going to need to give Jaden the time to throw it deep, to Terry, to Jalen, to whoever you're throwing it deep to Debo. There's going to be limited snaps. You're going to have to maximize them. I hope we're done with throwing the ball to John Bates. You'll need to do it a couple times so that they have to watch the tape on it, but on the whole, it's not a thing anybody's interested in doing, I don't think. And then Zach Ertz is going to get his. And with that relationship there between Jaden and him, you're not taking any catches off of Zach Ertz's plate. So it will be a limited sample size evaluation for Ben Sinnott. Preseason could be really important for him. If he gets reps with the ones, or what looks like the ones during preseason, he's going to have to maximize those. And those are some of the things we're watching for. Commanders back out on the field today. It's OTAs, the optional practices. Of course, AWOD will keep you posted on everything going on there when he takes over. Today at noon, we'll crosstalk at 12:15, because that's what we do. We put on good radio for you every day. We talk Commanders, talk about the excitement of the season and what's ahead of them. It's, you know, the Debo Samuel, Laremy Tunsil trades were the headliners this offseason offensively. And then you're always excited to see how they fill out the rest of it. Remember, Noah Brown didn't show up until training camp last year. These guys aren't done improving their roster. And I think we'll see a lot more of that as the season, as the offseason goes on. And of course, we'll relay it all to you. We'll take a break. We'll be back. This is your spot for the most burgundy and gold talk in Richmond. You're listening tonight.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Tend the fan 105.1 FM coming at you all week long from Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the Metrodome, formerly. I did the good memories earlier. They're not all good memories. I did the good memories earlier. UVA winning the Natty here. I do think this is one of the top five NFL stadiums. People ask, I've been to all of them. What are the best ones? What's your ranking? The answer in brief, we'll devote time to this tomorrow. The answer in brief is that Lambeau Field is a place you absolutely must go to. And with an early season Thursday night game this year, with the Commanders up there, if you're thinking about making the trip, make the trip. Transit is hard. It is hard to get to Green Bay. There's a city called Appleton about 30 minutes away. You can usually get a hotel room there. You can't get a hotel room in Green Bay on game weekend unless you got serious dough. Appleton's close. Milwaukee is about an hour and a half drive, and obviously plenty of options there. You can fly into Milwaukee. You can also just fly into Chicago, get a car, drive about 3 hours to Green Bay, stop in Milwaukee on the way. There are not a ton of great options. You got to explore the town, though, the area, the Title Town District, the history. It's an easy call. It's Lambeau Field. It's number one. It's not close. But the new ones, they've all got their thing. I would say Jerry World remains. The tribute to Jerry World, which is the tribute I give to Camden Yards as well, which is they've built dozens of stadiums since those two were built, and they still hold up as absolutely outstanding and not needing any work. Not that they don't, you know, polish it up from time to time, and Camden's coming up, I'm sure, on a refresh at some point here. But you can still go there and still get that sense of, like, This is special. This is really good. And Jerry World, of course, ushered in a new era of many Jerry Worlds. SoFi is its own thing. The thing about SoFi Stadium, which is obviously on the list, is they spent $5 billion on it. And, you know, money is a weird thing to mentally conceptualize. They always say that, like, deficits don't matter and the government stuff doesn't matter, because if the president comes out and says, like, it will cost $300 million, you're like, all right, that's a lot of money. And if the president comes out and is like, it'll cost $300 billion, you're like, all right, that's a lot of money. But those two are just such radically different numbers, and you throw in trillions in the mix, our brain just can't process. So $5 billion for SoFi was the most expensive stadium ever built at the time by $3.5 billion. It lapped the field, and it shows. Everything about it oozes LA celebrity, luxury, coolness, modernness, hipness. It's, and I say this about New Yankee Stadium too, while we're talking venues, it's not a place to go and be a penny pincher. It's definitely a spot for people with money and lots of money to go show off that they have lots of money. It's indisputably very nice, though. Then the mini Jerry Worlds, Minnesota here is fantastic. Great atmosphere, great crowds, great building. Atlanta, same thing. Great spot for a game. Those two kind of rise to the top of the pile for me of the other ones. We'll see what happens at Soldier Field. I love the history of Soldier Field. I love being on the lake. I think that's cool. Outdoor stadiums are always going to have a special spot for me. Arrowhead and Seattle are always going to be top destinations for me, just because you're outside, you're with a loud crowd, you're in a place where they appreciate football and go wild for football. So those two are always going to be really high on my list. The Superdome's a dump in New Orleans, but it's hard to argue being in New Orleans and that crowd gets really loud and fired up. So that's, if you like football, that's a great place to go watch football. If you like architecture, it's not a great place to go. Well, New Orleans is a great place to go, but the Superdome's not a great place to go to admire architecture. And we'll see if DC's lines up on that spot and where we ultimately rank that after what's going to be a wild building process there. By the way, a bunch of people came back from Vegas and told me, make sure Vegas is on your list. I said, nope, it's not. Vegas is great, and people went and had a fun weekend. That stadium's very generic, though. It's not special as new stadiums go. That's the Landover effect, where if you go to enough games at FedEx Field at Northwest Stadium, you go to Vegas, you're like, this must be the nicest place in the world. It's not. It's very average as new stadiums go, but it's walking distance of the Strip, so everybody leaves and has a great time, which goes to show you, New Orleans as well. You don't need a nice building if you have a nice spot. Minneapolis up here, they kind of need a nice building. This is a great town. Not right now. There's wildfire smoke everywhere, so nobody wants to go outside here. We'll see if I can wrangle some people to go outside. AWOD Radio coming up on the other side. We'll crosstalk with him at 12:15, get our daily discussion in as the Commanders do OTA practices, final OTA practices this week, and then the mandatory mini camp next week. And then we truly shut it down for peak bit season for a little while as we get ready for training camp and the reemergence of the Groundhogs after a long winter's rest in that last week of July. Always one of my, the reporting week, always one of my favorite weeks of the year. There's no football. There's no hint of football yet. But we're watching things that look like football on the practice fields, and we're talking about football, which the NFL, as they talk about expanding the season, I always say this, the offseason of the NFL is one of its very best assets, because by the time we start a new NFL season, we're all ready for the NFL. As they try to take over the sporting calendar, I would caution them, there is value in laying low and building demand for your product. But I don't run the NFL, and I'm not trying to squeeze every last penny out of it either. College football, same. There's value in the scarcity of the product. I'm already excited for Hokie football. If you missed it earlier today, I listed in no order, because I'm not a good enough sports talk host. We did no particular order, the best Hokies of the post-Michael Vick era. So that kind of cuts cleanly of the 2000s, is the other way to put that. A fun trip down memory lane. That's on the podcast. That's on the Odyssey app. You hit the rewind button. We started that about 10:30 this morning. Tonight, Flying Squirrels baseball, of course, resumes here on The Fan. They took the loss last night. That's the Flying Squirrels update. They took another loss last night. They'll be back home next week playing out the string here of the first half of the season. Also tonight, game one of the Stanley Cup Final. Edmonton and Florida up there in the Great Northwest. We're in Minnesota. It's pleasant. I don't think it ever gets pleasant in Edmonton would be my guess. Maybe you got like a few nice weeks in July. But that's a town that needs some action. Florida built for this. It's a rematch of last year. Series went to seven. Connor McDavid of the Oilers is the consensus greatest player in hockey right now. But can he get his first ring is certainly the main storyline here. The Florida dynasty, both the Panthers and Tampa, exchanging titles for a little while. The Lightning and the Panthers have run the sport for a little while. Can Edmonton wrestle that away from them, get Canada its first Stanley Cup in a while? Should be some great action, should be some great hockey. We'll check in on that tonight. We'll report back tomorrow with what we saw in tonight's game. Game one, always crucial, never decisive, but always crucial for the home team to get off to that start that you want to get off to. Game one's the opportunity for the road team to declare this is going to be a long series, or this is going to be not quite what everybody was anticipating. So the Oilers up in Edmonton hosting should be a rowdy crowd. Looking forward to that one tonight. And I'm rooting for the Oilers in this one. After going through what we went through with Ovi, not winning a cup for so long, would love to see Connor McDavid get one. Hopefully free him up to continue his journey to becoming one of the greats, because he is a ton of fun to watch play. If you tune in tonight, you will not be disappointed. We'll get you ready for the NBA tomorrow. Didn't even mention the Knicks fired their coach. How did I do a whole show and not mention that? Awad will mention that. Knicks fired their coach. Everybody's weighing in on that. Feels like when Milwaukee fired its coach a little bit. Like, you think you're more than you are, and then we never hear from you again. That's the vibes. Now, the Knicks are a great team. They're built for sustainability. Like, I don't think they'll drop off like the Bucks dropped off, but I'm catching those vibes. I'm out of my league now as well. I'll leave it to the pro to weigh in on NBA-related matters. He's AWOD. He's up next. We're back tomorrow. Thank you for joining us from Minneapolis. Signing off, this is 910 The Fan, now 105.1 FM.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.